The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Welcome to Part of the Answer, the show that gives you a peek into the minds of some of Chicagoland's best and brightest business, community, and political leaders. You'll hear the success stories behind their organizations and hear their vision for impacting Chicagoland and Illinois. No sound bites, no spin, just an authentic conversation about how they're making a difference in their community through their organization. Now, here's your host, Dan Erman.
Welcome to Part of the Answer here on AM 560. I'm Dan Erman, joined today in studio with one of our Illinois state reps who is not a Democrat.
Is that the only qualification?
Oh, it sure differentiates you from the supermajority.
That is true. That is true.
So you're hearing from Chris Boss. Am I saying your last name right?
You are, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So Chris, you and I met just last week.
Yep.
And connected, and I was excited to chat with you, learn a little bit more about you, and I think it'll be good for people to hear about who you are and what you're about and what you're trying to do in Springfield, in Illinois, and in representing us. So take us through a little bit of your backstory. You haven't always been a political guy. You have an extensive nonprofit background, and kind of bring us through your journey for how you got into politics.
Yeah, definitely not the guy throughout high school or whatever said, I think I want to be a politician someday. Just kind of through love of serving in our community, you know, walked the journey and ended up here. But my background is, as you said, a nonprofit, former kids and family pastor, off and on for about 20 years. Moved down to the area, the Lake Zurich area, from college, and to be part of a church plant, start something different. Was geared and focused for people disenfranchised with church, people who, you know, maybe had bad experiences growing up, or whatever the reasons were, you know, just were not engaging with a local church. And wanted to really invest heavy in the community. And we always said what happened outside the four walls of the church was way more important than what happened inside the church. And so that's the journey that brought me into the Lake Zurich area, made me fall in love deeply with that community, and continued to serve. I mean, I was working with PTOs. I was coaching Little League and doing all that before I even had kids, just to serve. But through my work with the church, got connected with some other organizations, and actually through Twitter, was learning more and more about this atrocity going on around the globe of human trafficking, and in particular, sex trafficking. And through that, got connected with a group that was heading to India and said, hey, Chris, you need to come with us to India. I'm like, okay, I'm going. Let's go. Let's see what's happening in India.
How'd your wife feel about all this?
So that's always been the most amazing thing through all of this. So when throughout high school, I'd gone about every other year out of the country, missions trips to, you know, we were working in the rough parts of Jamaica. You know, I've been in the mountains of Mexico. So I've been doing up until shortly after my kids were born. And I needed to put a pause on that. And so when I came home and told my wife about this opportunity to go to India, and they were looking to establish a couple of safe houses out there for girls that were victims and rescued from sex trafficking, she just looked me dead in the eye and said, well, you're going, right? It wasn't a, how are we going to get the money? It wasn't, should you go? It wasn't. She's like, you're going, right?
Your wife is awesome.
My wife is amazing. I'll say that she did the same thing when this opportunity came up to actually run for this seat.
Wow.
You know, I kept going back and forth of, I don't know if I'm going to. And she looked me dead in the eye and she goes, will you stop kidding yourself? You know you're running. And so I was like, okay, well, we're all in. And I think it's one of those things you have to have, you know, in this role, in this job, in going through the campaigning. You know, if you do not have the support of your family, you're doomed. You know, when those first mailers drop and saying stuff about you that's not true, and your wife going, okay, take the breath. We're in this together. We're fighting in this fight together. It means the world, and it's the only way to sustain, to get through that election season. And then even being gone, you know, down into Springfield when we're down there, and, you know, her having to do more around the house because I'm not around, and jump in more and manage more of the kids and schedules and all that stuff. I mean, if you don't have your spousal support in it, step out of the way, let somebody else do that. But
it's intense work. And yeah. If you're just joining us, you're hearing from Chris Boss. He's a state rep in the 51st District in Illinois, one of the few Republicans, especially in the Chicago area, who is representing us. And, you know, you talk about that long journey that you had into politics. You'd been involved in a number of things kind of politically, whether it, you know, be, you know, you worked with like a trustee, you worked as a trustee, you worked as a precinct committeeman and things like that. What was that turning point for you where like, no, I got to run?
So originally, you know, first ran for Ely Township trustee, wanting to help bridge the gap between the churches that I was working in and our local community. When you look at churches, we have a great resource, a great asset of people. And when you looked at some of these community organizations, particularly in the township, when they've got their service departments, they've got their youth and family departments, you know, the senior departments, where they need volunteers and they need people, or people that aren't connected to churches are reaching out to the townships to say, hey, I need help with my lawnmower doesn't work, or, you know, whatever general assistance it may be. And I think there's a fear out there of the church in the sense of, you know, well, if we reach out to the church and they're going to want to come in and bring their Bibles and start thumping on people and, you know, they're going to start preaching at people, when most of the churches don't do that. They just want to serve, and they're looking for opportunities to serve. So if I could find the opportunities and the ways to bridge the church world and the community to come together and help, and we've done that, and we were able to do that, and we're continuing to be able to do that and serve together alongside of each other. And the more I got involved in those realms, the more I'm finding myself sitting in rooms with people and like, what am I doing here? You know, I'm getting introduced to congressmen and judges and, you know, all these high up people. And I'm like, and here's little old, you know, children's pastor Chris. Or, you know, at that point, I was also working for a nonprofit doing fundraising and development. It's like, these people are up there and there's just me. But that genuine heart to serve and want to continue to serve is what kept those doors opening and kept leading down there of saying, hey, here's an opportunity to just be real and just be a person that can approach it from the attitude of, I'm here to serve. I'm here to serve my communities. I'm here to serve the people that I represent. I'm not here to boast up Chris and move Chris on the pedestal and, you know, walk around all whatever high and mighty. I'm just here to serve.
I like that. So you talk about being a pastor, but then getting involved in politics. How do you navigate, you know, do people look at you and be like, oh, you're a pastor, why are you doing this? Or how do you navigate sort of faith and politics and those things mingled together?
Yeah, it's a challenge, I think, for some to see that. You know, there's a few bills that I co-sponsored and added my name to, and some constituents, you know, jumped at it. I'm like, well, the separation of church and state. I'm like, no. Like, that's not what we're talking about here. I think there's always the challenge of every bill when you look at it of, you know, as a follower of Jesus, is this right or wrong? As a elected Republican, you know, how do they feel about that? And yet, as a representation of a very diverse district, how do they feel about that? And so it's putting all those together. There's certain moral lines that I will not cross. And I was very upfront and honest about that throughout the entire campaign of like, listen, we may not agree on things, but this is my line. I'm not going to cross that line. Now over here, you know, on this issue or these other issues, you know, let's have a conversation and let's do what's the best of our district. And not necessarily what's the most quote-unquote Republican thing to do, but let's do the thing that's going to be the best for our district and what the people would want. Because my job is to represent everybody in the district, which is a challenge, being a very, you know, politically diverse district, but yet also having the backs of those who brought me there and got me across the board, you know, on that side as well, too.
So for folks who aren't in the political insider world, and we talk about, you know, your district, like, where is that in the Chicago area?
Yeah, currently, the district is in the southern part of Lake County. I've got a little bit of Cook County of downtown Barrington, but it covers Lake Zurich, Hawthorne Woods, Long Grove, Killdeer, Deer Park. It goes over to North Barrington, Tower Lakes. It's not pretty lines. If you've ever looked at a district map, they're weird. It goes around Mundelein. So I have Mundelein, but not downtown Mundelein. And then Libertyville, Green Oaks, and a little bit of Mettawa. But if you've been watching the news or heard anything, they're all going to change here in this next for the next election cycle, as they do every 10 years after a census. But we'll see what the final results of that craziness will be.
Well, and that's ongoing craziness as well, where there's, you know, active discussions going on. I understand there's even lawsuits being filed at a federal level contesting some of it. And take us through a little bit of that.
Yeah, so there's a lawsuit right now. I know the Senate Minority Leader and the House Minority Leader have both filed together lawsuits. I think there's a couple of other. There was a Latino group that actually filed a lawsuit against the maps as well. The challenge with the maps is the data that was used to do that. Normally, we wait for census data. We don't have congressional maps right now because those have to be drawn to the exact person, and that only comes out through census data. But they used ACS, which is an American Community Survey data, which is old data. It's outdated. They used that to draw the maps to whittle around, you know, their people. They only drew Republicans in with other Republicans. There's no Democrats drawn in with each other.
Imagine that.
I know. Crazy.
Wow.
You think of, yeah.
Wow. Well, Chris, I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation when we come back. You're hearing here from Illinois State Rep Chris Boss. He represents 51st District. You heard him unpack the convoluted map that represents him. But we're excited about the prospect of Illinois and, you know, changing Illinois. Slow but sure, one person at a time. And fascinated to hear more from you as we come back. Here on Part of the Answer, I'm Dan Ehrman.
Of the Answer on AM 560 The Answer with your host, Dan Ehrman.
Welcome back to Part of the Answer here on AM 560. I'm Dan Ehrman, joined in studio, continuing our conversation with Illinois Representative Chris Boss. Chris, how long have you been serving in this capacity as a state rep?
Newly elected, was just sworn in January, so this is my my first round at it.
Man, so you're diving right into the deep end. 2020, 2021, what a mess.
It was a very interesting way to start. You know, we were down there in the beginning to get sworn in, and then everything, you know, we went back into remote committees, you know, doing everything via Zoom. There was a whole lot of hurry up and wait. Not quite sure what was going to happen, when it was going to happen, where it was going to happen. Are we going back to Springfield? Are we going to do this over Zoom? The Senate actually... Illinois Senate passed the ability to vote remotely, but the House never did. And so we were waiting for new rules to come out for the House to see if we could even do committees remotely. So, yeah, the beginning was this whole uneasy unknown, just sitting there waiting. But eventually we got that rolling, and it was an incredible experience. I was thrilled when we actually got to get back down to Springfield. There's an efficiency with Zoom, getting to meet with people and have those conversations, but yet there's nothing like sitting face-to-face. And he said, I personally was missing the hallway conversations, was missing the abilities to connect. Unfortunately, you know, being new and not having much connections with the other side down in Springfield, you know, my little bubble was a little Republican bubble. And the challenge to get out of that over Zoom was really hard. But once we were able to meet in person, you know, the opportunities for dinners and social events to be able to build friendships and relationships really took off. And I think that's when things really started to change for me in those opportunities. So I'm looking forward to wrapping this session up, and we still got a few things floating out there, and really looking forward to the next session. I think I'll be able to do a little bit more work, hopefully some more efficient work now that those relationships have been made.
Previously, we were talking about the remapping that's going on, and that's happening both at the state district level, but also the congressional maps and all the rest. It's kind of we're a little bit in limbo right now with that. But one of the other things that you're looking at right now is the budgets, and everything is out of whack with that as well. Kind of walk us through sort of the situation that we're looking at.
Well, the challenge with the budget is that once again, they're playing the same games that have been played for years and years, that we've got a new speaker, and he claims that it's a, quote, new day in Springfield. They still ran the same old playbook, right? The maps were drawn behind locked doors. Democrats got to go in and pick, you know, their districts, their lines. You know, the budget was brought in at like midnight, you know, hundreds of pages, double-sided. No one could read, you know, through it all. So much so that we actually were just back down in Springfield last week to fix the errors that were in the budget, because it was rushed through and we didn't get the chance to be able to read through it, figure out that they had the wrong start date for the budget, you know. So that typical standard operating procedure that's been going on in Illinois forever is still in effect. You know, this new budget's got a bunch of, you know, the pork spending and special projects. We've got federal funds that need to be used to help COVID relief. We need to be able to use those funds to pay back our unemployment insurance trust fund, but they're not. They're not utilizing that. You know, we just saw the $10 million vaccine lottery, $7 million, you know, for an individual, $3 million in grant or scholarships. But yet we're not talking about restoring the unemployment trust fund, which needs to be, because every single employer in the state pays into that. And now, because of COVID, because of the massive amount of people on unemployment, that trust fund's depleted. It's almost gone. I don't know what the exact number is, but that's going to increase unemployment insurance rates for every employer in the state of Illinois. And so if their costs are going up, cost of goods we're already seeing go up, it's going to lead to more hardship on these small businesses, less people employed. We've got the funds. We have the federal funds that have been given that we can only use for certain things. This is one of the things that we can and should be using for. So fill that trust fund back up, give some relief to our small businesses, and let's do what we can to keep moving the state forward.
My dad owns a couple of small businesses, and unemployment insurance is a big deal.
It's huge.
In a small business. People don't realize if you haven't been on that side of business, it adds up quick.
It does, and we already have some of the highest unemployment insurance rates, you know, in the country, and this is only going to make it worse.
Man. Well, Chris, you're involved in a number of committees down in Springfield. I wrote down adoption and child welfare, appropriations and public safety, housing, judiciary, mental health and addiction, police and fire. Those are some big, heady things. And we're coming out of the craziness of, you know, BLM protests last summer and just unrest, and culture's kind of a mess right now. And this legislation touches a lot of that. What do you see as kind of that go forward? What are some of the things that you're advocating for?
There's a lot in a lot of those committees. You know, I think there's a lot of challenges in each one of those committees as well, too. I do have to say I love the adoption child welfare one, because we most of the time totally get along and move things through quick. So that's the one that pops up on the calendar like, all right, good. It's going to be a good day for that one.
That's got to be nice to have moments of solidarity and like common good kind of things that are a little bit apolitical, but, you know, not a big controversy.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that, a lot more of that happens and people see it, just doesn't get the headlines in the news. There's a lot more of that conversation. There's a lot of those things that we do agree on that we can move forward with, but the ones that we don't, it's where the sticking points really do happen. And there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, the criminal justice reform, police reform stuff that was pushed through, again, right before I was elected, right before I was sworn in, you know, in the middle of the morning, like the last hour, cut debate off. Wow. and shoved that through. Well, now they're realizing that there's, again, because of how it was done, major errors within the legislation. So trying to make sure we've got the right trailer bills to go back through and make some of those adjustments, you know, working with my local law enforcement partners, my local police chiefs to say, hey, what do you guys need? We're reading it. What are the boots on the ground saying that need to change, and figuring out what we can change with that. Then it comes to housing. You know, we have a housing crisis. Beyond the values going through the roof, but you know, affordability of homes, especially in my area.
You've got affordability. You've got forbearance looming that's being held at bay for a couple million U.S. households. You're looking at people who have been kept out of eviction, and I get worried when I look at that. Of you know, even if only 25% of these people aren't able to stay in their homes, that's like millions of families around the country that are homeless. And it could happen in the next 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, it's a very complicated issue, because you also have landlords that aren't getting paid and can't file for the rental assistance on behalf of their tenants. And you've got tenants saying, well, I'm not going to do it. I want to do the paperwork, or whatever the reasoning is on that. You've got other landlords that have, you know, just a couple of properties. It was a retirement thing. They're looking to retire, but they can't even sell the house now, you know, when the market's hot. You know, they're thinking, this is the time that I would have sold the home, but because there's tenants in there, they can't even, you know, move their properties. So there's a lot of challenges with that. I think for us, you know, in my district, when it comes to affordability of homes, it's property taxes. You know, with some of the highest property tax rates in the country, and only going up, and you're going to see them increase even more now because home values are selling, or the homes are selling at higher values. That's going to reassess the property value, so the property tax is going to go up based upon the sale of the home.
It when I look at owning a property in Illinois, it feels more and more like I'm owning a trailer in a trailer park. And, you know, yeah, I bought my house for $50,000, but for a trailer park,
okay.
Right? Yeah, but you're spending $500-$700 a month in rent for the land that you don't own underneath it. And it Illinois is starting to feel more and more just like that in our property taxes.
It is, and I've got people that, you know, that worked hard, diligently saved their money, or close to paying off their house, but they'll always have a quote unquote mortgage in property taxes.
Yep.
And when they start really sitting down and looking at the numbers, they go, well, why do we live here? Why? I can't retire here. Yeah. How can I retire when I always have to pay these exorbitant numbers in property taxes? And so that's why you're starting to see, you know, those booms happening in Texas and Florida and Tennessee and so on and so forth, because people know that they can't keep that long-term root here. And what that does to a community when the mentality is, I'm leaving at some point. It shifts how you do everything, even from a business owner standpoint. The thought is, how do I do just enough to get me till I leave? When you look at, you know, people with homes, it's, well, what do I do just enough until I'm going to leave? Or when my kids look at colleges, well, don't look here in Illinois because we're not staying here. And the cycle just continues.
Well, I want to turn the corner before we wrap up here and look at, you know, you've just started in this work. Yes, there's huge challenges, but what are some of the things that keep you optimistic, give you a sense of hope for our community, and why you're involved today?
Oh, that's a great question. I love that one. Actually seeing on the inside that there are plenty of people on both sides of the aisle that do want to work together. There's plenty of people that don't, and there's plenty of stubbornness on both sides, but that people actually want to do work together. But the thing that gives me the most hope, I think if you look at the last municipal elections, we had more people, from my perspective, running for local office, more people out there knocking doors for their whoever it may be than ever before. There is an awakening, a rising up of saying, you know, local does matter. What's happening in our states and our communities does matter, and I can do something about it. That gives me hope.
That's huge. I'd look at our, you know, local school board. That's usually 80% of your property tax is
right.
That local school board. Get involved. Look for those opportunities. Chris Boss, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Your website is RepBoss.
B-O-S.
Nice. Yep. .com?
.com.
All right. RepBoss.com. Check them out. Chris, welcome to being a state rep in Illinois. Thank you for your work. Thanks for coming in today.
Oh, thank you.
All right. I'm Dan Ehrman here on Part of the Answer. Thanks for joining us here on AM 560 today.